Welcome back to you all. And now I think it's a real welcome. And it's my real pleasure to introduce Sushama for this keynote talk. And let me first say a few words about her professional path. So Sushama Agarwala got her PhD in 2009, working on renormalization à la Konen-Kraimer. Since then, she held postdocs at various places, including Caltech, Hamburg, Oxford, and the University of Nottingham, trying to solve a two-body problem with a child, like many of you probably. In 2016, she started a tenure-track position at the United States Naval Academy. At this point, she realized that permanency did not imply an ability to prioritize one's family or have dignity in the workplace. And she is now a mathematician working in industry, studying the mathematical foundations of artificial intelligence. And we're really grateful, Sushama, that you've accepted to deliver this keynote talk. You kindly accepted, and thank you very much. And the topic of this talk will be Why Women Leave, Model Women and Models of Discrimination. And I think, but Sushama will tell us more, she will posit two concepts from the economics literature as hypothesis for the observed data on women in academia. So this talk includes time for discussion about how these concepts can inform our approach to mentoring junior women. And Sushama hopes that people will feel free to ask questions during the talk, but when she gives a signal. So we'll all wait for her signal. Be encouraged to ask questions. So the floor is for you now, Sushama.
Thank you, Sylvie. I am I'm honored to be here. I thank Kasia immensely for enabling me to give this talk here. I was at the first Women in Math Theoretical Physics Conference in 2017, and this feels like a mathematical family to me in some sense, right? There are women here who I've seen speak who were my undergrads. There are women here like Sylvie who have mentored me since I was a grad student. There are people here that I have gone to grad school with. This is a real homecoming for me. So I'm super pleased to be here. I'm going to start out talking about the leaky pipeline. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because we know what the leaky pipeline is. These figures here are from a Canadian study done in 2012. And it looks at the women and men in from undergraduate to full professor. In Europe, in Canada, in the US, this is just a universal problem. And we also know that while we're sitting over here in the humanities, okay, maybe it's not so bad, but then eventually we don't start off bad and then it gets bad. In the biological and life sciences, we don't start off so bad, but then it gets bad. And where we are in the physical sciences and engineering, it starts out bad. And then it gets worse. So this is not anything new. The thing that I want to talk about in this to you today is not why or not how the leaky pipeline exists or whether the leaky pipeline exists. I want to talk to you about the fact that I want to present a different way of thinking about this problem because as mathematicians, oftentimes the thing that we need to do to be able to solve a problem is step back, take a different look from a different angle, and all of a sudden, the solution becomes clearer. And I'm not proposing any such magic here, but certainly the importance of being able to look at things differently. So, and this is a shout out to you, Lisa, for being able to read my mind. One of the things that I want to talk about today is survivorship bias. So for those of you who don't know, but have maybe taught undergraduate stats, survivorship bias is just another form of selection bias. And it is essentially what happens when there's a screening process in place. And if there is a screening process in place, people who pass the screening process have different characteristics than people who don't pass the screening process because, well, they've been screened. screening processes themselves are not a bad thing, right? We do screening processes all the time, every single time we write a calculus exam. Students who pass our calculus exam have different characteristics than students who fail, namely, hopefully, they know calculus. So my problem is not with the screening process. My problem is when, unlike a calculus exam, we have a screening process that we actually have no control over. My hope is that, you know, when we write a calculus exam, the exam is well thought out. We know what topics we want to cover, et cetera. What if we're in a world where we can't actually observe the screening process? Or we can't observe both sides, those who have been screened and those who have not been screened. What happens then? How do we understand our situation in that situation, in that case? So the term survival process, survival bias, came from exactly studying this type of problem. Abraham Wald, again, for those of you who have taught first year statistics, he is the Wald of the Wald test. He first coined this phrase. He was a professor at Columbia University in the 1940s. And he was seconded to the military during World War II to study the aircraft that were shot down, to try and figure out if there is a way to bring more of our airmen home. So the question for him really was, what type of damage can an aircraft take and survive? And the thing that they realized very, very quickly is that they only had data on the people who passed the screening. They actually had no idea what bullets and where the bullets had to hit in order to make an aircraft fall as opposed to survive. You know, they could look at where the bullets were missing, but maybe not all of them were pertinent. Or maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe it was some combination, or maybe it was the density, or, you know, there's various factors that you can't get at by just looking at the survival sample. So he coined this term, and for this specific problem, he came up with, you know, very statistical tests to be able to determine this. But the key problem, the key selection bias problem itself is still there. You know, if we only look at the people who survived the screening process, what information are we missing? So, okay, let's take a slightly more mundane problem. This is a true story. I was living in London when my son was entering pre-K-4, and we were assigned a brand new school. You know, the school had just been built. It was still actually under construction on the first day of school. It was like brand new. And the school wanted to start a parent-teacher association, like many schools do. Good. So the principal calls a meeting for interested parents at 10 a.m. one day. And then the principal goes around and asks the people in the room whether or not this is a good time to meet. And most of the parents say, yeah. Some of them say, well, you know, I had some difficulties. But this is really important. I was able to rearrange my schedule because my child's education is important to me and I really want to be part of this community. And the question I have for you is, given this screening process and this method of only asking the people in the room, what might the principal have missed?
So, Sushama, I think this is a question for us. Is that right?
Yes, this is. Yes, I would, as I said, yes, as you said, Sylvie, I would love for some audience participation in certain parts of this.
Should I set something up for anonymous answers?
Not for the moment.
I just want discussion. But if you could set something up for anonymous answers for the absolute end of this talk, that would be lovely, Kasia.
I will do that. Yes.
Technology there has failed.
So Libby Farrell says, people who can't rearrange their schedules because of work, family obligations, etc.
Yep.
Sri Valuri says, some people might have gone to work and were not present. Maria Elena Tejeda Yeoman says, he might miss the fact that at other times more people would come.
or a different set of people even. Yes.
Yes, that's true.
Exactly. No, you guys are spot on. And that's exactly the issue. It's, you know, one might conclude by looking at the people in the room that, oh, the parents who didn't come to the PTA meeting just don't care about their kids' education. That may not be the case at all. And in fact, the parents who couldn't come to this particular timing may have different needs than the parents who were coming, who just, and you would miss those needs entirely, right? If there's a group of parents that are more in need of after school care, they're not represented because they can't be represented. You are by definition selected out of the process. So this is the general, there we go. This is the general type of idea that I want to talk about. We in academia at universities tend to look around, ask mostly the female women who are still sticking around, why do women leave? The fact of the matter is, by just looking at the people who managed to stay, we're not going to have any sort of idea. And that's the key thing that I want to get across in this segment of my talk. So, there we go. So in order to kind of proceed with this talk, I need to give kind of a underlying assumption that I'm going through and I'm going to stick with throughout this talk. And this underlying assumption is that systematic discrimination is a stochastic process. What do I mean by this? I mean that it is something that happens to some people more than other people, and that I want to stay away from arguments of, oh, if that woman did this thing, then maybe it happened to her. The analogy that I want to draw is that imagine a bad traffic situation that, you know, it's icy, and many, many studies show, this is well documented, there are just more accidents on icy roads or rainy roads than there are on a day when it's good weather outside. Zero when there's good weather, and only accidents when there's icy weather. It's possible during an icy weather situation to say which of the extra accidents were caused by ice. You could look at each and every single one of those car accidents and say, oh, that one, maybe that driver was texting while driving, and that's why the accident happened. So it wasn't due to the ice. All we know is that more happens during icy than happens during fair weather. And that's what I want to think about systematic discrimination as well. All I want to use, the only assumption that I'm going to use, is that somehow it is there because you are in the wrong place at the wrong time. So before I dig into examples about, you know, that are relevant to the community, I just want to do a little bit of a toy model, right? Like, we're all mathematical physicists. We all like toy theories. So here's my toy theory. I have two populations, completely identical, except for that one is orange and one is blue, okay? And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give them one more difference. I'm going to say that one population is three times as likely to get marked than the other. It's not that one doesn't get marked, it's just that the other one gets marked more. And then I'm going to say that if a member of either population is marked, they have the exact same across the board probability of dropping out. So let's see what happens at this. And I'm going to run this through multiple stages, and then we can have a little bit of a discussion. So there we go. Stage one, I mark a population. The orange one gets marked more. Stage two, some of them drop out. Stage three, we start seeing some people getting marked twice, some in both groups, actually not in both groups yet, but it'll happen. Stage two, some people drop out. Stage three, now we start seeing it in both groups. And again, the same percentage drops out. So at this point in time, I want to just pause here and see if people have any ideas of, you know, what I've been modeling. Throw them out, put them in the chat, whatever you want to do.
So any suggestions? So where could we have three times more?
Oh, Sylvie, you are being facetious. Microaggressions, certainly. Thank you, Anna. Yeah, Right. So at different levels, right. So the different stages are different stages of maybe someone's career. Each marking is an act of aggression, of discrimination. Absolutely. I want to be a little bit more explicit here. Here, this is an example of a leaky pipeline. Yeah, this is a screening process for with discrimination bias. Absolutely. This is a leaky pipeline. We're seeing the leaky pipeline happening before our eyes. And conferences like this are excellent because what it's going to do is it's going to change one of them being 3 times as likely to be marked to being 2.5 times as likely to be marked. And if we can do that, we have won a victory. No questions asked.
So Shama, maybe before you go on, let me read the latest.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yes, get hit more times, the more likely you leave.
It looks absolutely.
Process, Lee, and screening process with discrimination bias.
Yes, 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 yes. So I am so glad that you guys are tracking. You are yes. This is exactly where I'm headed. But the next slide that I want to take you to is this. Now I want to take a look at the people who have left and the people who have stayed. And I want to ask, when we are, I need to be on the screen. When we are looking at these people here, how much of their lived experience, or how, maybe a different way to put it is, how likely is it that someone that I draw at random from here is going to have the lived experience to explain what is happening over here? And again, I welcome your thoughts on this issue.
Anyone want to react to this question? Maybe could you reformulate it once again, if you don't mind?
So I am saying, you know, I'm saying we have a screening process, and I just want some sort of thoughts, et cetera, on how the people here have different characteristics than the people here.
So not likely, we tend to think we're lucky. Most people don't directly experience the problem. The survivor population really won't be hit by the bias. And looking at the multiply hit points, your model might even catch intersectionality.
Well, I wasn't aiming for intersectionality. I was trying very carefully to stay away from race here. I might talk about it tomorrow, just a spoiler alert. Okay. Yeah, I think that's a good summary of what I'm trying to say. So in terms of mentoring, if I draw somebody here from this population at random, they're likely to say, oh, in order to succeed, you need to publish papers more, which is absolutely true. No one is questioning that. But what this person might miss is what the barriers to publishing more papers might be experienced from this group here.
Let me compliment a little bit what people have said in the chat. Maybe defensive. The ones on the left are observers of the ones on the right. If they have good memory and guts, may be able to testify to the effects of the ones on the right. Then another one, when you move to the disconnection side of the percolation critical point, you can't talk to everyone.
So the person who is talking about percolation theory is something that I do not, that is not a theory that I am very well versed in, but I would love to chat with you further to see if I can build a better model for the next time I give this talk. That's putting a plug out there for later, because I truly don't know that literature at all. Okay, so I want to, in my next slide, you know, bring this back home to something very, very concrete. You know, I mentioned literature and publication, and for those of us who have made it to the postdoc phase or even to the grad student phase, we are just told that publish, publish, publish. That's the only thing we need to do in order to get a job. But let's dig into that a little bit more. So this is from a paper, I have the citation later on, David Card, I think 20, I'm not gonna give the year. And what he, David Card is a Clark's medalist. He is an economist. He is the, he is on the editorial board of 2 of the top economic journals out there. He is, and because he is a editor, the thing that he was able to do was he was able to take a look at a bunch of the data for the papers that have been submitted to him. And he can take a look at review times, and he can take a look at citation rates, and he can take a look at various other things. I'll be returning to this paper over and over again. And what he takes a look at and sees when he looks at the data is that if he compares equivalent papers, papers by women take on average 3 to 6 months longer to referee than papers by men. That's what this graph here is showing. So now it is not a too far of a reach, let's say, to say that the people who are unfortunate enough, again, this is all in terms of stochastic processes, who are unfortunate enough to get referees who take longer to get back to women, or even just get back to you, period, will publish fewer papers and therefore will get fewer job offers. And therefore, if we are only asking the people who are sitting here, the ones that got the job offers because they were able to publish more and in a timely fashion, what we need to succeed, how are we failing these people we mentee? Or how are we failing our mentees? This is kind of the last slide I have on this topic, so I want to open it up to discussion for a little bit, in case there are any thoughts that people want to share. And then I'm going to move on to a different topic. Thank you, Kasia, for being able to do the anonymous comments. I appreciate that.
Thank you. So everyone has seen that for anonymous comments.
So I can then share this at some point. So I can share my screen and show the comments.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
So any comment on what Sushama has just mentioned about the reviewing time and the uneven distribution between males and females? So Juliette Benitez can't know what we'll miss, but can possibly conjecture what might help. Sumati, any statistics for physics? Sri Varuri, is it possible that some reviewers may have gender bias?
That is a very good question. So the gender review question is actually, sorry to cut you off, Sylvie. That's exactly the point here, right? That there are some reviewers, and by no means are we saying all of them, there are some reviewers that absolutely have a gender bias. That is what this curve, that is what this distribution is showing. We don't know who. And therefore, I mean, maybe we do if we have enough information about the people, because we all know our colleagues. But generally speaking, we don't know who. And therefore, you send out reviews for paper, you send out papers for reviews, and they get back as they get back. And there's not a whole lot you can do about it. This is exactly the stochasticity of the process that I'm talking about. The person, Shumati, you asked if there's any statistics for physics. This is one place where I would, like, in terms of understanding our own problems, like cleaning our own house, I would highly recommend, like, this is all literature that is coming from the economics departments, our economics departments. Like at APL, I can't ask people to look at the economics literature, because we don't have any economists in-house that we can hire to look at this or ask to look at this. No one has a skill set. But if some chair from PI asked some female economist studying this at Kansas State, I am willing to bet dollars to donuts that she would come and give a talk and possibly even help you set up your own study.
So
do in-house.
Let me read a few more comments. The women who get reviewed more quickly and thus get the offers may not even realize that this is a problem.
Exactly.
Correlate with the assumption of competence, depending even just on your name, people will assume you're competent or not, and thus be reviewing differently.
Lisa, I want to get back to that point in a second, because there's a slide that deals with that.
Shall I go on reading a few more?
Yes, please. Yes.
I'm reminded of Rosalind Franklin, Watson and Crick, in the DNA, where Rosalind was not fairly treated. ones on the left would be advising mentees to sit tight. That's referring to the previous slide, I think, and work hard to get the paper published, no matter how long it takes. But we should be saying that if the referee shows signs of bias, to contact the editors immediately. Wait a minute. Immediately and or bias. It's not clear to me why longer wait times equal less papers. That's a question for you, maybe.
Yeah, so longer wait times really just means that if you are having, there's all sorts of reasons why if you have to wait longer for a paper to come out, maybe it's hard for you to get co-authors because you don't have a publication record to back you up. I think that's a stereotype threat that was being said. Maybe it is just a discouraging effect because you are spending so long reviewing and re-reviewing and re-reviewing the same paper that you don't have the energy to write a new one yet, because there's only a finite number of time, a number of hours that God has given each and every single one of us. So yes, and then, so I want to use the, thank you. The Rosalind Franklin comment is stellar because it is exactly a lead in to the next topic I want to discuss. So the next topic I want to talk about is the Jackie Robinson effect. So for those of you who are not American, or for those of you who do not follow baseball, Jackie Robinson was the first African-American baseball player to break the color line in the US. So he played for the Brooklyn Dodgers. He fought in World War II, and then he was allowed to play baseball in the major leagues. And there is no one but no one who doubts that he is an excellent baseball player. He made it to the Hall of Fame in 1962. And the reason that I bring up the Jackie Robinson effect here, and the reason that I feel like Rosalind Franklin is a good tie-in here, is that there is this logical fallacy out there that the existence of good women is evidence against discrimination, which I recognize is not the point that you were trying to make with Rosalind Franklin, but it just felt like we look at such a powerful woman as a mentor, as an encouragement that yes, other girls can do it too. And what we really should be telling our daughters is a slightly different story. So the logical fallacy, you know, I mean, very recently in the US, we had this issue where Obama became president. And it was all of a sudden, oh, we're in a post-racial America. And in the UK with Margaret Thatcher, or in India with Indira Gandhi, there was all of this, oh my goodness, or in Germany, I forgot about Merkel. In Germany with Angela Merkel, there's all of this discussion of, oh, sexism doesn't exist anymore. We have a woman in the most powerful position. You know, we're hearing it in the US a certain amount again with Kamala Harris. And the fact of the matter is, the fact that you have the existence of one or a few absolutely stellar women is completely and totally consistent with a world in which there is hiring bias. So let me start off with a few places where we can see this that are non-academic, and then I will go through and give some models again to understand what's going on. What we see is female members of the US Congress, and the studies, unfortunately, have been mostly, those studies I'm aware of have mostly been done in the US, and I apologize for that. But female members of the US Congress pass more bills. So they co-author more bills, they pass more bills, they get more co-sponsors, all of these other metrics. And they bring home about $50 million more to their regions per annum than the males. So that's Anzi and Barry in 2011, who's the first paper that really brought up the Jackie Robinson effect. As an economic theory. The other place where we see this is that female doctors are less likely to have patients die on them and are less likely to have patients be readmitted. And this is not just because somehow female doctors only see patients that are kind of better off and therefore less likely admitted as well. This holds, you can see here, this goes against quantile of difficulty of case, of how sick a person is. It is across all the quantiles that female doctors perform better, have better health outcomes. So not just in academia, not just in politics, also in medicine, in so many places we see women outperforming men. And as much as I would love to say, yay, raw girl power, I would like to posit that this is actually evidence of bias. So how does this work? Again, let's do another toy model, okay? So if I have hiring, I know for a fact that hiring is, it's not a perfect process as much as we would love it to be. We try really, really, really hard to hire only the best people, but you don't have perfect information at, you know, looking at a CV. So here's, you know, if we had perfect information, our candidates would all line up along that black line, but they don't. There's noise. You know, over here, maybe here's a guy or a girl or a something that has, here's a candidate who has a advisor who just pulls out all the stops, networks like mad for this person. You know, this person performs or appears to be a better candidate than if we had perfect information. And maybe over here, I was just talking to a colleague of mine earlier this week that she went to a job interview and she slipped and fell on the ice. And now that she's kind of recovered a little bit, is pretty sure that she gave her talk concussed. You know, stuff happens. That's why there's noise. This is, again, we're talking about the stochasticity of the process. Things are noisy, but that's okay. We can still do a really good job. And maybe if I click, there we go. We can still do a really good job of hiring. And if our perceived skill here, anybody who has a perceived skill above 2 gets hired. So those are the filled in black dots. So we have noise. We hire everyone with perceived skill above 2. And we see that, you know, we're still getting mostly the better candidates. We're not screwing up too badly. It's okay. Like we have enough. We're not picking these dodos over here. We're still picking pretty darn good candidates, and it's okay. We have a system that functions. This isn't a critique of the hiring situation, of our hiring algorithms. Instead, what I want to say is posit is that if I live in a situation where there is a systematic bias against a certain part of the population, now, instead of their perceived skill matching their actual skill under perfect information, we have their perceived skill being less than their actual skill under perfect information. So let's add noise to this and see what happens. Again, you got a very similar situation. You still have, you know, some people who don't do as well as other people, but when you go to the hiring, it's okay. You still get lots of very good candidates. Let's compare the two now. And here's where it gets interesting. If I take a look at the red candidates who were hired under bias, and I take a look at the black candidates who were not hired under bias, I see that the red dots, the average actual performance of the red dots is higher than the average actual performance of the black dots. And that's the Jackie Robinson effect. When we see women doing better than men, it is completely and totally consistent with the Jackie Robinson effect. We cannot reject this null hypothesis. So, okay, stop. Sushma, that's not how hiring works. You know that. We all wish we could hire as many candidates who are above a certain line, but that's just not what budgets allow. Fine. What happens if I only have a limited number of slots? I can only hire 8 candidates. Still see the same thing. The red dots on average outperform the black dots. Okay, now you're gonna stop me, maybe, or someone's itching to stop me because what you might've noticed is that the black dots and the red dots are not 2 different draws from the same distribution. They're just the same distribution shifted. Okay. So what happens if I actually take 2 different draws from the same distribution? Men and women aren't identical. Not every man has his counterpart female candidate. Why isn't it? There we go. Okay, and so now I have 2 different draws and I still see the same thing. The average red candidate outperforms the average black candidate. And I wanna point out a few things here. You know, here's this, oops, sorry, that wasn't supposed to happen. Here's this red dot far and away the best red, the best candidate on the field in the department, happens to be red. That's not evidence against discrimination. Similarly, when you take a look at this person here, maybe not keeping up as much with the rest of the pack. That too is not evidence that she was a pity spousal hire. This is, there's nothing here other than a random number generator. The stories that we put on it are stories meant to explain away randomness. And we cannot fit noise without overfitting. And that's exactly what we're doing. So let me talk about this again. Let's go back to the card et al. Paper that I referred to before. And I forget, I think it was Lisa who made the comment about better or worse papers. And the point that I want to bring in the same paper, what Card showed was that the women, the all-female women, the all-female authored papers tend to get higher, you know, even if I control for the recommendation of the referee, they tend to get cited more than papers by men. Again, in economics, I would welcome people to do studies in their own fields. So it is not somehow that there's a quality difference that is causing the referee times to differ. Okay, final score that he did, or final kind of testing that he did, or that I'm gonna talk about here, is the Flesch reading score. Reading ease score is a score that's available with most Microsoft products. You can probably do it on your own computer to see how your own papers score if you own a copy of Microsoft Office. So he took the mean scores of women and men as they publish papers. You know, this is the first paper, the second paper, et cetera. Red is women, blue is men. So the empty dots are the drafts and the filled in dots are the final drafts. And what do we see? We see that men and women produce the exact same quality of initial draft. But then Jackie Robinson effect, in order to actually get published, women's draft and readability scores pushed up. For the first one, stays the same for the second one, pushed up again, stays more or less the same for the third one, pushed up again, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we do not see the same effect for men. There's a screening process with bias. Or rather, this is not evidence of, this is a statistical process, as with all things, but this is completely consistent with the Jackie Robinson effect. So I want to end this discussion and then we will move on to the activity, and hopefully Kasia will help me figure out how to do this on the fly.
Susha, do you mind putting this, going back to the previous slide? I think I'm not sure time to read everything. There's some small print.
So I have, yes, there are several things that I did not want to speak out loud that I kind of left for the reader to read on their own.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Susha.
Sure, no problem. Can I move on? Is there any other objection for me to wait?
There are comments here. It also takes time to improve the writing, thus wasting time. Quotes, because better writing isn't a waste, but it is time that women end up spending, but men don't. Mm-hmm. Yes, the writing becomes very important somehow. It is a very interesting observation.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Maybe. There we go. Okay. So I just want to leave in a story. Then this is a story that is very near and dear to my heart, mostly because I was at MIT when all of this hullabaloo came out. Nancy Hopkins, a biologist of zebrafish fame, eventually just one day got fed up with everything that she was facing. And she got together with the 14 other tenured women in the sciences faculty at MIT. So not in the arts, not in the engineerings, but in the sciences. And they looked at their own compensations, the positions that they were given, the grant salaries that they were given, the space, lab space, various other resources that the department allocated to the women, and compared it to the men. And they found that across the board, women were given less and asked to do more. And this, of course, you know, this landed on MIT like a bombshell, the way, you know, to have actually a rigorous study of this. And to his credit, Charles Vest, who was the president at the time, took this seriously. He took it seriously. He publicized it. He did not try to bury it. Over the next several years, while he was still the president of the university, he made active efforts to hire more women. So full credit to him for doing what he did.
Just a comment from yes, Kasia, yes. And I think it...
Yes, it was. This was exactly...
It was featured in the Picture of a Scientist movie.
Yes, I refuse to watch that movie for PTSD reasons, but yes, this is exactly that story.
So many people here would have watched it because it was available for PI researchers a couple of weeks ago, so they should know the story.
Okay, well, let's see if they know the full where I'm going with this.
Yeah, no, this is very good. This is great.
Maybe you're going to steal my punchline, maybe you're not. Let's see. So there was blowback to this. People protested. And with the standard protestations, oh, well, maybe women are going on maternity leave for longer. Maybe they're not being as productive. Maybe they're, you know, all of the standard things we all hear. And they did another study, which has not been released publicly, so I wasn't able to draw the figures from there, but I have heard Nancy Hopkins speak on this issue. They showed that even controlling for all of these other protestations, women were still making less for every metric, for every unit of productivity along the various metrics they decided to test. And so back in 1999, this was 12 years before the Jack and Jill Robinson paper, the Anzia Berry paper that I cited. You know, I didn't know Jackie Robinson effect. I just knew the old adage my mother had told me about women have to work twice as hard to make half as much, which is the flip side of the Jackie Robinson effect. One other thing that I need to say here before I conclude the story is that there is one department where they did not find these differences. And this department was my home department, it was math. And the reason that they did not find these differences in math was because there were no female tenured faculty in math, so they could not conduct the study.
So Sharma, there's a
yes. comment.
I see how the more admin happens, you don't want things to be done crummily, so you do the things yourself. It rewards people who don't care.
It says Karen, who has admin duties that she needs to run to today. I hear you. I absolutely hear you. But at the same time, well, I don't want to get into sociological analyses of these things. What I want to point out is I just want to raise awareness that these are the types of things that are happening. So that as we tackle it, we also have these issues in the back of our heads and know that these are well-studied issues. Thank you, Lisa. Yes.
So Lisa, who is allowed to not care and who gets punished for not caring?
Yes, absolutely. There is a double standard, which is part of the, again, it's the bias that comes in that in order to survive, you have to be better. That is exactly what the Jackie Robinson effect is saying. So at this point, Kasia, can I have you take over for a little bit and maybe walk us through how we can submit anonymous responses? Because that I had thought that I would have people annotate here, and I want to transition to the activity in the last 15 minutes. That at this point in time, if anybody wants to not participate in this, I am going to give a trigger warning because we are going to talk about some very hard things in the next couple slides. So I want to make sure that everyone who is participating is willing to, if you participate and feel uncomfortable in the middle of it, feel free not to. If you feel like you would feel safer keeping your screen off, please do so as well. Whatever you need to do to feel safe participating. I have no.
I'm just lost. What are these numbers? What are the numbers?
No, she's going to explain it. Alessandra, if you let me finish, I will give you full instructions, but I feel like before talking about a discussion that is emotionally charged, I should give a little bit of forewarning.
Okay.
Thank you. So hopefully I can, okay, so what I would like people to do is to go to just grab a sheet of paper. No, just a scrap of paper will be fine. Break it into two groups, two columns, one for positive points, one for negative points. Everyone will have a score of positive points and negative points. At the end of the day, you're going to subtract and enter that number into the setup that Kasia has given us. So to begin, add
just to make social summa, so it can be negative as a token.
There will be, yes. Just add one if you have, subtract one if you have. So I suspect, you know, just tally up the positives, tally up the negatives, and do the subtraction.
And Sushma, it's
all mathematicians, I know you can do this.
If you've had more than one of what you say, you still get a one.
Yes. You know what? Actually, this is very subjective. This is not a clinical study of anything. This is just to get a sense of the room. So if there are points here where you feel like this has been something that has been such a huge life-changing advantage or such a huge life-changing setback, feel free to give yourself more than one point. This is supposed to be experiential, not technical or by any definition. Does that make sense?
Well, the first one you showed is also sort of numerical. Like you could have had.
Yes, no. So yes, for this one, I'm thinking if you have had advisors who have co-authored papers with you, give one. If you haven't had any advisors, give none. Give yourself no points. Subtract one if you have ever felt underqualified for a position that you currently hold or have held in the past. Add one if you had a advisor or mentor promote your work. Subtract one if you've ever had an advisor or mentor disappear on you or lose interest in your work. Add one if you have felt supported, again, generally speaking, there's no definition, no one's going to check your answers, felt supported by family and friends about your career choices on the whole. Subtract one if you've had to choose what type of family you've had in order to make your career work. So add one if you felt like many of your colleagues share your life experiences. Subtract one if you feel like if you have reason to believe that your performance or papers, leaving aside the discussions we just had on the talk, were judged differently than that of your peers. Add one if you've been able to communicate professionally in a language that you are fluent in. Subtract one if you have survived sexual harassment and or abuse. I am not saying only in the workplace here. Add one if you have trusted your mentors to have your best interests at heart. Subtract one if you have reason to believe that the salaries or the promotions that you have received are not on par with colleagues with similar credentials. Add one if you have had a spouse change jobs to support your career. Subtract one if you've been denied or pressured out of taking family leave. Add one if the holidays that you have that are celebrated by you and your family fall during term breaks. Subtract one if you have been criticized for how you present yourself in comparison with regards to gender, cultural, or racial norms, explicitly or implicitly. So sometimes it's hard to tell. Again, very experiential. Add one if you felt comfortable being yourself amongst your colleagues. Subtract one if you have felt personally threatened by comments made by colleagues. add, subtract, add one. If you've been confident that your family will be cared for, given your career choices. Subtract one. If you have suspicion or evidence of illegal actions taken against you during hiring decisions. Okay, that should be the game of 20 questions we're playing. Please go to menti.com and take a moment to enter your score. So take the positives, subtract the negatives, that's your number.
Sorry, Sushama, you said subtract the negatives. You mean add the negatives? Or?
Yes, okay, fine. Like you do the math in the right direction, right? The plus points minus the number of negative points that you've had. So, Kasia, do you have a way to enter in any sort of a histogram of what type of discussion we're about to, of what type?
Yes, I will do it on the fly. I will just be doing it while people answer. Yeah.
I can just
do it in Excel sheet.
Yes. Can you, if I stop sharing, can you share the screen at the
top? I can share what people are answering and I will put together the Excel sheet. So yeah, I will be sharing what people are showing, what people are entering.
Okay, so while you are doing that, and I'm sorry to have to do this on the fly like this, I just wanted like maybe pause and take a moment to see if people have any reactions to that activity.
So anybody would like to comment on the type of question? Maybe are there missing questions? Are there some you didn't find relevant? Did you expect these questions?
No, I'm going to share screen, sorry. Can you please answer?
I can stop sharing. Yes, I will stop sharing. There you go. All yours.
Could we see the questions again? That's a good thing.
Oh. Yeah, not if Kasia is going to share the screen.
Okay, well, I can wait until people enter and then I will share.
Yeah. Oh, have people not fully? Okay, hold on. Give me 1 second then. Let's go back to
So there. Some people scored much lower than expected. A lot of questions seemed like they will become relevant in the next 10 years, but have not been in those. This person, Dina, has not yet been in that situation. Sumati startlingly hit right to the bone.
Did I well understand? We have to enter a number in this window discussion.
That's right.
Correct.
Adding, if I've understood correctly, adding the positive and the negative with the negative sign for the next.
It was not supposed to be complicated. It is supposed to be a rough metric of how many advantages you have and how many disadvantages you have added together, appropriately signed to give you a generic score.
So my feeling was it would have been interesting to spot out the questions which were not relevant for us, which we could not answer, which we couldn't do. There was no way of taking them into account.
What do you mean by that, Sylvie?
Well, there are quite a few questions I didn't answer.
Sure. And so I tried to break this into, so it doesn't matter if you add, like the opposite of a one is a zero and the opposite of a negative one is a zero. So if you end up, so in either case, if you were disadvantaged by something, you move forward a step. And if you were advantaged by something, you move forward a step. If you were disadvantaged, you move backwards a step. So in either case, if you didn't answer a lot of questions, that just meant somehow we're not marked. That's exactly what that's trying to get at. If you go back to that previous slide.
Yeah, but that you won't see. That's what I mean. You won't.
No, I will see that because it's going to take everything. It's going to put everything onto a continuum. Once Kasia is able to show the histograms,
I'm not able to do the histograms. I really don't know how to do it. I'm sorry. I can show you the numbers.
Let's just see the numbers. No, that's fine.
I was also not expecting to be doing this.
Of course not. No, I mean, I had it set up originally. If we could all mark our own, then the histograms would appear on their own. But that's...
I think what Sylvie is getting at, Sushma, is that you can't see the difference between someone for whom all 10 things applied, and so they got all 20, and so they got 0. And someone for whom none of the things applied, and so they got 0. And there's a difference between someone who's had a lot of positive experience and a lot of negative experiences, and maybe they canceled out, versus someone who was just sort of untouched by all these issues.
Right. And that is intentional. Partially, it is intentional in order to protect anonymity. Partially, it is intentional because I don't want to play the game of which of these are really hurting someone and which of these are not. I want to get a general feel for 2D histogram. I want to get a general feel for where people spread out. And in particular, the thing that I'm hoping to get an idea for as soon as I'm going to stop sharing so Kasia can share. What I want to get a feel for is where the people who are mentoring fall relative to the people who are seeking mentoring. You know, is it that the people, you know, whether it's been that you've been extremely privileged because you've had, whether it's been because nothing's happened to you, or because if you've had some good stuff and some bad stuff, I'm saying those are equivalent experiences, though I know in actuality they're not. You've had some leg ups and you've had some setbacks. And also because whether or not one of these things is in the positive end or in the negative end, I could have just as easily negated the questions in the negative end and turned them into positive, and you just either add one or not either time. It would have been the exact same exercise. Because of, in terms of kind of relative advantages you've had, it's going to be the same thing. Does that make sense?
So unfortunately, most people entered nothing, just the number. So
that's fine. That's fine. Most, let's see what we have.
Most people will be other.
That's fine.
But can you please start the whole thing again? Because I think maybe some of us were still thinking about the questions.
It was very fast.
We can do it differently. I can make a slider so that you can enter your score on the mentor, mentee, or other slider. How would that work? Because this might be easier to do.
Okay, very good.
I'm sorry, I will have
Sushma,
to...
Sushma, I think really have a point. And I think the questions you're asking, I think they are...
Dorothea, can you speak louder, maybe?
Is it better now?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Sorry. There was something I fixed with my Zoom stuff. Anyway, I think Sushma, I think you really have a point. And I think the way you pose your questions is very different from what, at least in Germany, we usually discuss. So in Germany, we usually discuss, is there a woman who might be better than any other man? And then discussion, of course, roars, and, you know, people say, oh, no, of course not. And I was in a committee, I'm as a woman, I'm in a lot of committees. And I was in a committee recently where I put into the protocol, so in the minutes, I said, okay, we are hiring a woman, but it has nothing to do with gender stuff. It's her own scientific merit. And I made a point of putting this officially into the minutes because I feel that, you know, the whole thing is going sort of crazy. Because, I mean, you could just as well say, we're hiring in Germany, say, first generation immigrants, or in Canada, landed immigrants, or whatever. I mean, you could mm-hmm. you could pick any choice of things, and I think the question you're asking, they're really good, and so so I appreciate the second chance of answering them.
Yeah, so this is now open again. Now you have sliders, and you choose the slider that applies to you. So either mentor or a mentee or the other. So
Kaja, how does it work? I don't.
You go to menti.com, then you enter the code, which I'm posting on the chat right now. And then you see a screen where you have three sliders. So you're a mentor, so you will enter your, so there are sliders, you can slide their numbers from minus 10 to plus 10. Should I include more?
No, because the mathematically it is not possible to be below minus 10.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I didn't do that calculation. Okay, good.
And sorry, Kasia, just to clarify, like the categories are for the conference. I mean, your mentor.
Yes. Conference. Right. It is yes. Whether, because and part of what I want to get at, or was hoping to get at, maybe it's not happened because of technology issues, was where does the distribution of people who are selecting to be mentors fall relative to the people who are seeking mentoring? And whether or not our experiences actually qualify us.
So now you will actually see histograms if you.
You are lovely.
Technical,
congratulations.
One technical issue. One should
click skip for the options that are not relevant to you, because otherwise there'll be a lot of zeros for everyone everywhere.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
Sorry.
Oh, so you're just entering one number. You're not. There's no skipping. Anyway.
No. If you don't use the slider for the other two, then it'll register that as a zero for those answers.
Oh, well, I didn't have that issue.
People have made that mistake. So we'll just have to discount the zeros. There'll be a pile of zeros that are
around. Oh, okay. Should I
then
reopen?
All the people that actually answered zero disappear.
Should I reopen it again?
No, I think it's fine.
No, we should look at the Instagram.
We should look at the Instagram.
If you want.
Sorry, I'm stupid. I'm really stupid. I don't know where to go to do.
Okay. So go to www.
Okay. And no.
Okay. And then you enter the code 6998431.
As a code?
You will ask you for a code when you go to that website.
The website is what?
The website is menti.com.
M-E-N-C-I.
Sorry.
No worries.
Nancy.com might be for sale. So, guys, maybe I should just give up.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Kasia, can you share the results?
I can. But
I will stop sharing.
Yeah, when we are ready for that.
Yes, go for it.
So, let me just do that. Yeah, so there is a pile of zeros. I'm sorry because, as I said, I wasn't prepared for organizing this.
I am really sorry.
So much better.
I had thought technology would work differently.
So you should be able to see now these sliders. Okay. Do you see them?
And what exactly does that tell us?
This is the average.
Okay. So we ignore the peak of zeros. Fine. So we have the average, and what are we seeing here? I am seeing a bigger hump of scores in the negatives for the mentees than I am for the mentors. I am seeing more scores in the positives for the mentors than I am for the mentees, although I am pleased to see that there are scores in the negatives for the mentors as well, because that does indicate that that does indicate that there is there are people who have the experiences to be able to successfully manage.
But I think other category has more people like in the positives. So other category has a real pile up here in the positives.
Yes. People who have chosen neither to mentor and or be a mentee. Yes. Mm-hmm. The pile of zeros is unfortunate, but that's okay. Just because it's hurting me visualize this. But
yeah.
It is, I mean the what I want to point out here is maybe just a awareness that our experiences are incredibly varied. And while maybe the means are a little bit different, they're not that different. But the thing to take away from this, just looking at kind of the anecdata of this room, this absolutely anecdata, is that our experiences are truly varied. And you know, we're already flattening a huge 20-dimensional space into a one-dimensional scale. And to further just consider whether or not when a woman or a student or someone who is at risk of leaving is coming to us asking for help, that maybe our experience is not the best guide to what they should be doing because our shoes are not their shoes. There is a bit of a shift. It's not it is heartening that it's not a strong shift. I want to see if other people have other thoughts. Those are just my thoughts from looking at this data.
Any comment? So any spontaneous comment to this distribution that we see on the scales? So there was a comment by Lisa that those who are others might be people who came from PI just to listen to the talk. We don't even have mentorship programs, says Sumati. So I'm a bit surprised that it's on the whole rather positive. I'm quite surprised.
But I am speaking as a mentor. I am speaking to women who are at risk of leaving. So part of it is we're already, by the time the women get to this conference, they have already, they haven't even gotten to the door here already, right? The PhDs, the postdocs, have already gone through several screening processes to get here and have needed the positive in order to be able to get here. Like, let's keep in mind who and where we are. And the other thing that I want to point out, absolutely without a doubt, even if you are this mentor over here, at the 10, it in no way implies that you didn't have to work hard to get to where you are. That is not what this is saying. This is just a attempt to rank various experiences against each other.
It could also be that so Alessandra also says, no surprise, it's positive we're here. It could also be that we've just got used to it and we just underestimate what we have experienced and forget. It's a survival behavior to forget the traumas.
But there's already sort of pre-selection process of people who actually did sign up for the conference, right? This is already, I think, a lot of bias.
So I would argue that the people who are in the negatives are those who are at risk of leaving. I will, for instance, tell you that I am the mentor over here at -6, and I am no longer in academia. That is by no means pressure for anybody else to reveal their scores. But to kind of emphasize Anna Heffernan's comment.
So there are other comments. I would have had many more negatives if the questions, wait a minute.
I want to push back on that question. If you stop and think about it, it really is, I could have just as easily written this all as a 0-1.
And then just a minute. I'll just finish this.
Sure.
in common. I would have had many more negatives if the questions would have always included the complementary event of the plus one. In other words, the minus one questions didn't complement the plus one questions. I had the same problem.
Yes. So the if you think about that, if I have the minus ones and the plus ones, then each question would be a two-point step, as opposed to a one-point step. I could have easily just taken all the negatives and replaced them with a never and turned them all into positives. And would have been the exact same thing. The point math on this is rigorous.
Okay, so there's another comment. There are lots of people in the negative. Would these be considered people at risk of leaving? I'm among those, just to say.
Yeah, and it's not, it's a stochastic process, right? Like, it, and people who get marked are, have a percent chance of leaving. That was what my model was saying from the beginning. It is not that you are guaranteed to leave if you are negative. But the more negative you are, the higher the probability is. You are rolling a dice.
So another comment, I guess if I would be doing this in my institution, I would want to include more mentors to try to cover the complete spectrum. You want to have mentors that can help more in a more diverse environment, ? Otherwise, we will not be able to really keep more students from going away, ?
So this is exactly part of the point that I'm trying to make here. We look around the room. Okay, I am going to talk about intersectionality. If we look around the room, and this was a slide that I took off, everybody who has made it to tenure track, please keep your camera on. Switch to gallery view. Everybody who has not, please take your camera off just for 5 seconds.
Say it again.
Everybody who has made it to tenure track, keep your camera on. Everybody who has not made it to tenure track, please take your camera off. Let's just take a look around and look at the faces that we have seen. Now, everybody who, let's switch it. If you have not yet made it to tenure, to tenure track. So assistant professor or equivalent, turn your camera on. Everybody who has made it to tenure track, please turn your camera off. And continue to look around at the pictures that we see. I see a difference in the two samples. Does anybody else see a difference in the two samples? Okay. Let me be explicit.
More people smiling in sample one. That's, that's a nice comment.
I see a lot more faces of color. Let's just be blunt about it. One of the problems that we have as an industry is a lack of diversity. It makes it that much more harder for people of color to make it. For people of color to find the mentors they need to make it. The same thing goes for LGBTQ, the same thing goes for various, you know, first generation, same thing goes for all of these other categories that we care about. I'm just picking color right now because that is visually seeable where some of the other ones are not. I love that comment, Maria. But my question really is, and this is a genuine, I have no idea. Where are we going to find that diversity if we don't hire it? Or if we don't keep it?
So there's another comment by Sumati. It's also that perhaps, I think that was about the mentor-mentee distribution. It's also perhaps a younger people don't face the slew of negative experiences that someone who is a mentor has gone through. I have come across young women who denied discrimination in their youth and who later come by and say, hey, you know, I now agree with you. Also, just something that Alessandra is saying, I felt the same. I realized I forgot many unpleasant situations from my PhD times. I had just removed them from my mind. I would vote for a different number now. Yeah. Younger people just have fewer experiences total.
There's absolutely, there is a time effect to this, right? Like you get marked at each stage. You get marked when you're in an undergrad. You get marked as a master's student. You get marked as a PhD. You get marked as a postdoc, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you're absolutely right, Karen. There's fewer opportunities. But even accounting for that, we are still seeing some patterns here.
Oh, do we have a question?
There's yes, a question?
I do. Well, not a question, a comment rather. So this is very difficult. I try to speak openly with you because, you know, we're all women and, well, apart from not women around, but mostly women. I have two difficulties with this whole issue. And as Zushama said, I mean, people of color, I mean, I feel so I myself am really privileged. So I come from you know, bourgeois sort of background. And my parents always thought that whatever I would do, you know, I would succeed in. And I did experience harassment, and I did experience discrimination, and a lot I forgot. I mean, as Siri just said, I mean, I forgot a lot about it because, you know, in the end, it didn't matter for my career. And so I just, you know, sort of said, okay, never mind. Okay, gone, whatever. But I feel, at least in Germany, I feel that we have other groups to think of as well.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, first generation immigrants, first generation immigrant women in particular. And I feel that the whole discussion, I mean, this whole thing about now we have to, when we have a job opening, we have to say that, you know, we are not only welcoming male and female, but also diverse applications. I think that's a problem that's, I mean, it's completely minor compared to what's really going on with, you know, say a girl immigrating from Syria with their parents and, you know, trying to get through school, not having any German classes, not, you know, not being accounted for when they do the mathematics Olympics or something. And I feel somehow we're sort of discussing a luxury problem because, I mean, I don't know about your backgrounds, but I feel that I would guess that we are all sort of privileged. I mean, the whole lot of us sitting here, and somehow I feel that we're discussing, you know, even if you think of male students. You know, first generation academics. I mean, they came from some. I guess they did some. They participated in some mathematics competition, and then, you know, some teacher was kind to them, and somebody saw that there was some potential. And I guess we all experienced the same. We all had someone at some point of our careers where somebody saw our potential and somebody said, okay, go for it. You do that. You know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, you know, something similar is needed, especially in Western Europe, to sort of, you know, develop the full potential of everybody. Sorry, not just the privileged women.
No, I mean, okay, so
there were,
I mean, this is going back to Maria's point of, you know, if we don't have diversity in our faculty, how do we promote? How do we even recognize what that potential looks like? And this is exactly the selection bias question that I was, survival bias, selection bias, outright discrimination question that I was trying to raise and model. I don't care whether it's Shumati or Lisa who goes next.
So can I take that privilege? So I think Dorothea's comment is actually, again, of I think quite profound, very important. And it's this issue of class, it's the issue of privilege. I'm a person of color, but I live in India and I'm from a very privileged situation. So color doesn't mean the same thing. Caste does. And so there's
religion does.
We have caste, we have religion. And it is definitely something that in these discussions, I'm glad you brought it up because I think the idea is to use our common experience to become more inclusive, not to deny class, because class is very important. And as you said, and as you know, many of us have thought, that by not including talented people from all across, that we lose out. I mean, one of the things I like to say is that, you know, any scientific revolution you expect will be delayed enormously if we don't really find talent everywhere. But I think that on the other hand, I think that it's therefore very useful in this particular context of talking about this particular class of discrimination, particular issues of discrimination. It doesn't take away from it, you know. So I just want to say that I don't think they're contradictory, and I think they add to the discussion rather than take away.
I was avoiding talking about the race and class issue mostly because it is another layer of complication on top of an already very hard problem. The question really is, from a very selfish point of view, the question really is, how does a university keep a loudmouth, outspoken, passionate mentor like me from leaving because they're treating her like crap? Pardon my French. And no offense to French people in that saying. Sorry, Lisa was next to the
There were other questions. Ghazal, I think, if I'm pronouncing your name.
Maybe Lisa wanted to go first. You had her.
No worries. I was still to the point of, we need to not only look at the dimension of gender discrimination, but also take class discrimination, racial discriminations. And Susama did mention that she did skip out on the whole part about intersectionality, which this is a part of intersectionality. And we need to really look at all of these dimensions because they do keep building upon each other. And there's a lot of very interesting literature about that, especially for the perspective of Black women in America. And I think it's one of the problems that in a lot of Europe, I mean, I'm at a university where there's a diversity department, Gleichstellungsbeauftragte. This is only about women. No other perspective is being considered at all. Mm-hmm. We are currently trying to build a queer network at the university. And the first step is just convincing them that actually they should talk to us, that something about having queer academics around is not just something you need for the Pride Parade once a year. And all of these intersectional identities, we should try and think with each other and try to keep in mind. But again, just because we are trying to keep them all in mind doesn't mean we don't need to start somewhere. And of course, we need to be careful not to go into what is sometimes called the white women's feminism. As soon as the number of women is the same as the number of men, everything is fine. It doesn't matter what else there is. But
can I just interrupt you for 1 second? There is the great Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Dorothea is nodding because she knows exactly where I'm going with this. Once said my hero that she will think that there is women's equality when there are 9 women on the Supreme Court, because for so many years there have been 9 men and no one batted an eyelash. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, so I think that was already what I wanted to say, that I think intersectionality is the important part, and we need to think that along, but it can't detract us from collecting around the things that we have in common, which at this conference is mostly the gender dimension.
Thank you. And maybe Ghassan would like to say something.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I just under intersectionality and class and race, I just wanted to make one point, right, that how different perspective can be. And the one anecdotal example that came to my mind was, for example of a student. We were doing a admission process in the university, and we have a very good student and very qualified admitting on every scale. The students is stellar, but one of the TOEFL scores, for example, was below the line for the university. And then so then the usual story is that we talk it through and say, okay, maybe a student can take an English class or something. And a student is coming from the developing country, and the admin perspective right away is, no, it's fine, we can sign them up for this college, summer college, that they can take a term in the country. And like just the lack of understanding at that point, that do you understand? So what do you mean? But living a summer in a college, paying tuition, paying life expense, like that's a lot of money. And they're like, no, don't worry, you're not paying that for out of your budget. The student will pay out of their budget. I'm like, you're talking about $6,000-$7,000. Do you have any idea what that means in a Middle Eastern country or South Asian country? This is not something that some. So anyway, I mean, there's so many like things like that comes up where, like, again, like being even a woman in a privileged situation doesn't necessarily see from the other aspect of the, if you don't have the other perspective, you never see that part of. Okay.
No. So I would like to highlight something that you said. I think, I don't know if you even realized that you said it. I hope you did. That a lot of what you just did in that anecdote there is take yourself out of your shoes and assume for a moment that maybe your reality is not everyone's reality. Yeah. That was a mistake that the admin was making. Mm-hmm. And so bringing it back to mentoring, which is the entire reason I wanted to give this, is when we are mentoring, looking around, Dorothea's point, most of us senior women are women of privilege. You know, since the Black Lives Matter movement, the phrase white women of privilege has become a thing in the US at least. And most of us here are that. And as Sumithi pointed out, white women of privilege doesn't apply in India, but I think she understands exactly where she falls in that, in the analogous statement. If we're going to be mentoring, if we're going to be successfully mentoring, we need to get those people who are considered underprivileged minorities up and through the system so they can replace us when we retire. Or even before that. But in order to do that, we need to step out of our shoes and into theirs. And that's the point that I'm trying to make when we start thinking about survivorship bias. Maria, you had your hand up for a while. Yeah,
so then, yes, Maria, Dorothea.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
I just wanted to go back to Susama's slides, basically, where she makes an exercise of survival in these two populations, and she made a point in this example of showing everybody that you have several situations, and some of us managed to survive and still be here to offer mentorship, but some of us maybe didn't get hit that many times. Or didn't get hit at all. And we are still here for mentoring as well. And I would want to go back to the point Dorothea was making, where she was assuming that all of us, since we're here, we are somewhat privileged because we had somebody in our lives to support us or to push us through. And I would just want to go back to the actual argument that I understood from Susama, was that there's a difference between being able to survive and just having a complete environment that you didn't choose, but you are privileged to live in, that allows you to survive more without, let's say, without with less struggle. I'm gonna leave it like that. So I wanted to say that the exercise that Susama just made and the little slides that we voted on, I think the fact that we're doing that exercise with the mentors and mentees in this particular program for this particular PI event, and that shows barely we just crossed barely the boundary of decent, let's say, cross-section of mentors and mentees. I think this actually goes as an argument opposite, I guess, to what Dorothea was arguing about, but maybe she can answer. The point is that if you survive due to these situations, you have more experience, but we must not confuse that with privilege in this case. I don't know if I'm understanding the word privilege.
No, I think it is a very valid point. You know, one of these markings could very well be having lost the parent lottery at birth. One of the most, you know, for economists who look at these things, or maybe put another way, because it's an international audience, having lost the citizenship lottery at birth. That is absolutely one of these markings. I am trying to abstract away from the nitty-gritty details, and I recognize that I'm dredging up some very painful and difficult subjects. So I appreciate your patience in that. But I absolutely agree with you on that point. The privilege is the failure to have been marked at some stage. I think we're talking about the same thing, Maria.
So yes, there's an interesting comment. Maybe Maria's point relates to marked versus unmarked survivors. Yes. So maybe would you like to say something more about this, Susama, or do you think you've addressed this point?
So yes. So there are. I mean, so the reason that there are marked survivors is that, you know, as Sylvie said, she is negative, right? She is this woman right here, Sylvie. I hope you like green. Or maybe she's this one here who's been marked twice. It's not that everyone who gets marked leaves. It is a completely stochastic process. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm saying anything new. I do have to say one thing, that I do have a very important work meeting that I have to be at 3. So I hate to cut this conversation.
And you're not the only one. Lots of people already said how much they appreciated the talk, but that they have to leave to go.
Yes, but we can maybe continue some of it tomorrow. I mean, we have also other agenda of the panel.
So tomorrow there is a discussion where we could address some of these points. And let me, on behalf of everybody here, I think everybody appreciated your talk very, very much. It triggered very many interesting and enlightening discussions. Thank you so much, Susama. And
thank you for this opportunity.
And tomorrow we can go on. Thank you.
You're going to take more of a beating. I love that.